Good evening. That just almost scared me right there. Those of you who don't know, I preach off my iPad, and I hit my button, and it didn't come on. I have notes because I don't memorize everything, okay? So that does help me. But it did finally come on, so you're all right tonight. Well, I'm looking forward to our youth rally next week. I think it's going to be a wonderful time for our young people, a wonderful time for the adults as well. You know, I met Caleb when I was leaving Bear Valley. Caleb came to school at Bear Valley, and he was there about 2 months before I moved. And actually, you know, because of such a brief period in which we knew each other, I knew the name, but had a hard time in my mind putting a face to it. Well, I sat down at Polishing the Pulpit in this tech class, imagine that, and he pokes me and goes, "I know you." And I go, I said, "You look familiar." He said, "I'm Caleb O'Hara." And I said, "Oh," I said, "well, you know, you're coming to where I preach." He said, "I thought you were in Texas." I said, "No." I said, "You're coming to Cary." Well, we were sitting there, and he was sitting behind me, and suddenly this hand comes up with an iPhone and puts it in front of my face, and he's texting with Chad. Is Chad here tonight? Well, that's no fun to pick on somebody when they're not here. Well, y'all tell him to listen to the recording. He puts his iPhone in front of him, and he had texted to Chad, said, "I'm sitting behind your preacher." And Chad said, "Reach up and slap him." See, what Chad didn't know is that preachers, we stick with each other. So I found that out on him. But looking forward to it. Caleb is a wonderful young man, a wonderful young preacher, and he will do I'm certain, a fantastic job for us this coming weekend. You know, as we continue our series on Third Sunday Nights, the people that God wants you to know, tonight I want us to think about Lot. He is a very interesting character that we see snapshots of him. We just kind of see events that happen with him. We don't see any kind of long narrative. The longest narrative we have is basically him fleeing from Sodom. That's about the longest narrative we get about him in his life. But otherwise, we kind of see snapshots, and they're kind of snapshots that are more or less in Abraham's picture album, right? He's kind of just included with Abraham or a part of events that are happening around Abraham. You know, he's also a character that goes from great riches and ease to a Bible character that is isolated, scared, poor, and desperate. He makes quite a turn in his life. His life really goes down a terrible path, and we can track that entire turnaround in his life to one decision. Isn't it amazing how one decision affects our lives so oftentimes, for good and bad? Sometimes we make the right decision, right? Say, "I made the right decision marrying Jenny." It just doesn't, you know, that's one of the best decisions I ever made in my life, because she has done more for me in my life than any individual. You know, so we think about right decisions, and then there are times when I've made decisions that to this day I still have terrible regret. And I can see a terrible path that they led me down at the times that I made them. But Lot makes a decision that literally just destroys his life. And you know, I think that's important for us to see the power of one decision. You know, Lot was the son of Haran. Haran was the older brother of Abraham. He was probably 60 years older than Abraham. Because we see that when Terah gave birth to his sons, the Bible includes all three of them just in one thing. Like we know that Noah has said he begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth in the 500th year of his life. But we know from another text that actually Shem was not born until 502. And so sometimes the Bible doesn't mean triplets. I've heard people say it's triplets. It doesn't mean triplets. It just means that that's the year that they had their first child of this number of children that they might list. And in this particular case, it lists Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran being the older brother. Well, Haran died before Abraham and his brother and Terah, and their families left the city of Ur for Haran. So he died while still back in Persia, before Abraham began his journey for God, Haran died. Now, Lot was probably at the time when Abraham leaves Haran to go to Canaan. He is 70 years old. This is in Genesis chapter 12. Lot is probably 30 to 40 years old, depending on when Haran had, when he was born to Haran. Abraham was probably taking his brother's son under his wing to help him. I think that says something about Abraham, don't you? I mean, I think you see here Abraham seeing a responsibility. Maybe it's because Abraham wasn't having a son, right? Maybe they weren't having children. So he saw an opportunity here to kind of take Lot under his wing and to kind of help him out, kind of be there for him. We understand that. We understand that in our family situations very well. It shows a kindness to him, and it's a kindness that we see in Abraham throughout. Lot also, having inherited what his father had, was obviously, from what we see in the text, a very wealthy man as well. And so, you know, he and Abraham bring a lot of resources into play. We're moving around together. But Genesis 13, Abraham's and Lot's flocks. Now, we know they went to Haran, and then Terah died, the father died, and then Abraham was called to go and leave Haran, and to take, you know, and to take his wife, and they were to go to the land of Canaan. They did that at the age of 70 years old. Genesis chapter 13, we're in the land of Canaan. Abraham and Lot's flocks, though, had become so large that the land could not sustain both of them. So their shepherds or their herdsmen were getting into fights, for lack of a better word. They were getting into arguments and into fights. They were having strife, as the Bible says, between the herdsmen of Abraham and the herdsmen of Lot over where they were going to graze their flocks. And so Lot, it does not appear, he didn't appear to be seeking a solution with Abraham. Maybe he didn't care. It's not real clear. Maybe he was afraid of what Abraham would do. I mean, Abraham is the uncle. In that day and time, he had the authority as an older family member to make the decision. And Abraham will make the decision, but maybe Lot was afraid that if he went to Abraham and tried to work this out, Abraham might just say, you just need to take your flocks and get on out of here. This is my area. Maybe he thought, if I just avoid it, then, I don't have to hear him say that. But Abraham, on the other hand, he wanted to fix the situation. And I think we see Abraham fix it with the wisdom and the calm that comes with age. I look back to preaching when I was in the 20s. I'm sure Ted can think back to those times too. When you first start preaching, you don't have as much calmness about you and as much wisdom as you do if you preach for 20 years. My dad used to say, I tell him I was all fired up and ready to go. Dad go, you just need to settle down. He said, you'll understand one day why it'd be better just to stay calm in these situations. But I was all fired up. I was young, and I was going to take it to him. And fortunately, most of the time, because of the great respect I had for him, I listened to him, and he saved me from many terrible situations I could have got myself into. Well, Abraham wanted to fix this situation. Genesis chapter 13 and verses 8 through 9. Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen. Why? Because we are brothers, he says. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If to the left, then I will go to the right. And if to the right, then I will go to the left. I remind you that Abraham here, as the uncle, could have made the decision for him. Abraham could have said, you're going over there, Lot. And Lot would have been bound by that family honor to do exactly what he said. But instead, he gives the decision to Lot. And Lot takes this decision, and he makes his decision based on greed. I guess we could say he makes it on lust of the eye as he looks out over the land, right? It says, Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. I think it's amazing. Of course, you look at that today and you can begin to kind of, you know what's going to happen in the story. You know about Sodom and Gomorrah, right? But you look at that now in the Dead Sea, and that is a desolate region, right? But yet at that particular time, obviously the destruction that God wrought had lasting impact. But at that time, when you looked out across that land where Sodom and Gomorrah were in the Jordan Valley, it was like the garden of God. Like Eden. So things changed, didn't they? But this is a great place to take your flocks. Great place to be. As far as in regards to that, but there were more things to consider than just that. See, this decision will have a terrible impact on Lot's life. And every decision, as we look at this decision, needs to be weighed carefully. Because decisions have a way of stretching out beyond us. They have a way of stretching out to generations after us. And affecting people all around us. You know, it says there at the end of that text, they separated from each other. Apparently, this strife between Abraham and Lot, I think there's more here said than just the fact that one went east and one went to this other, you know, went to the other area. I think there's something here to be said that maybe this had stressed their relationship, at least probably on Lot's side, a little more than just, you know, between their herdsmen. Because they separate from each other, and I think we're going to see that from Lot's side, we don't see him really back in any kind of relationship with Abraham ever again. We see Abraham coming to his aid, but we never see Lot with Abraham again. You know, the foolishness of Lot's decision is the proximity that this move brought him to evil. You know, he was here with Abraham, the father of faith, the man that, you know, it was really good for him to be around, a really good influence, and he's going to leave that influence, and he's going to put himself smack dab in the middle of now what is the poster cities of the worst places in the world to live as far as evil and sin. Cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Verses 12 through 13 say, Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. You know, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33 makes it clear that bad company corrupts good morals. That if you play with the pigs, you get dirty. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18 tells us to flee immorality, but that's not what Lot did. And that's going to be detrimental to him. You know, the separation between Lot and Abraham seems, though, to be exactly what God wanted when you look at the big picture, so to speak. You know, God made His promises to Abraham, these magnificent promises. Now, He made some promises when He called him to leave, but He made these magnificent promises only after Lot left, right? You know, I think we kind of see stages of Abraham's faith, and everybody goes through these stages of faith. I don't care how strong a person is in faith, they've gone through stages to get there, haven't they? Some of you have now been Christians for many, many years, but every one of you that have been Christians for many years and now have a very strong faith can say, yes, I have gone through stages. There were times when my faith was not what it is today. See, we see God call, according to Stephen in Acts chapter 7, he talks about the call by God to Abraham when he was still in Ur. And Abraham was called to leave, but Abraham didn't leave by himself with just Sarah, did he? He leaves with Nahor, he leaves with Terah, he leaves with Lot and all their families. So they go to the city of Haran, and they're there for a while, and Terah dies, and now God calls him again, right? He doesn't want Terah. Terah's not a part of this. Abraham leaves, he takes Lot. But see, Lot's not a part of the plan either, is he? And so God waits until Lot's gone, and now he gives Abraham kind of the big picture. You know, Abraham kind of had this tendency about him to kind of do some things that were outside of what God wanted, right? Like with Hagar and Ishmael. Sometimes he kind of thought better sometimes. And I mean, I love the Bible because it doesn't candy coat its characters. It does show their flaws sometimes and the things where they don't make the best decisions in regards to what God wanted. But I think we see stages of Abraham's faith here. So God did not have plans for Abraham's father. He didn't have plans for Abraham's brothers or his nephews. He had plans for Abraham and his children through Sarah. Well, before long, We see that not only is Lot now just got his tents near Sodom, right? That he's living in the city. In Genesis chapter 14, we see that the kings of the east, led by King Chedorlaomer, come to attack the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, the cities of the valley, and they conquer them. And verse 12 says, they also took, along with all the possessions of Sodom, they took also Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions, and departed, for he was living in Sodom. Now, anytime the Bible tells us something, it's important to take note of, right? The Bible doesn't just say things just to be wordy. Now, I know y'all can say, well, Nathan, you're pretty wordy. Yes, I am. And there's some things that I might say in a sermon that, you know, you might say, well, that had very little value. And it might not have. I don't know. My wife says I can just talk. But when the Bible says something, it's profitable. And it says, it makes clear, I mean, you might even be able to infer from this text that he was living in Sodom. But the Bible wants to make it very clear, he was living in Sodom. So Abraham, as we know the story goes, he gets his men up, right? And he goes after this army that conquered these cities, and he defeats them, and he takes back everything that was taken and all the people, including Lot, and he comes back. And we have the situation with Melchizedek and him offering to the God, the Most High God, through Melchizedek. That's the story with Abraham. Well, 29 years after Abraham left with Lot for Canaan, we see as we continue to move forward, now Lot is not just living in Sodom. He's not just near Sodom. He's literally, it appears, a leader of the city of Sodom. Genesis chapter 19 in verse 1, when the two angels come, you know, the three men come to Abraham. He feeds them. You know, Sarah laughs when she hears that he's going to have a child. You know, we got to remember that both Sarah and Abraham laughed at that prediction. Not just, sometimes we just blame Sarah, but Abraham laughed too at another occasion. But then those two men, two of them left, right? And the one that was the Lord remained behind and began to talk. And that's when Abraham made his deals for Sodom. If there's 10 faithful or righteous men in the city, will it be saved? These other two men go down to the city. And upon entering the city, there is Lot sitting in the gate. And that is kind of ancient times wording for he was a leader. Because that's where the leader sat, to judge the people, to pass down, you know, to give wisdom to the people. So he's literally, it appears, a leader of the city. And these two angels come and they visit Sodom. And, you know, Lot knew enough. I mean, Lot's not living in this city with his eyes closed, unaware of the kind of people that live in this city, because when he sees them, he sees a need to get them off the street, doesn't he? Y'all need to come to my house, really. You really do, you know. I mean, he's compelling them to come to his house about as strong as they're going to be compelling him to get out of the city. You know, y'all need to come over here. He strongly urges them to come into his house in verse 3. Verse 4, we understand why. And while the Bible has told us that the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah were exceedingly wicked, we really didn't have a kind of a picture of what that meant, right? Until right here. I mean, just hours before their destruction, God gives us a little peek, doesn't He? As to exactly why fire and brimstone is going to rain down on these people. It says that the men of Sodom came, wanting to sodomize the two angels. You know, apparently this was common. I mean, apparently Lot knew that this is what happens to new people that come to town. That's kind of a scary thought, isn't it? I mean, people so out of control. Masses of people. All the men of the city. You know, and then we begin to think about it. He is a leader of this city. He's a leader of this type of gross immorality. He is comfortable living in this city of evil. He is giving his daughters to men. You know, he has son-in-laws that he's going to give his daughters to, that he goes and talks to. But he's giving his daughters to these kind of men in this city. Lot has gone down a long way, hasn't he? He's lost a lot. in his mind and in his life. Lot even offers up, and this is not the only time this happens in the Bible. We see this happening also with the Levite later in the days of Israel when he was in the Benjamite village. But Lot offered his two daughters to this crazed group. Here, take my daughters. But don't take these men. Well, they literally came, these men did, and they were literally going to knock down the door of Lot's house, and the angels strike this mob blind. And you think, well, that probably brought it to an end. No, folks, these guys are so desirous of these men that even blind, they're still trying to get in. They're still trying to get their hands on. I mean, they've been struck blind and they're not thinking about their blindness. They're still focused on getting to these two angels. Lot had become a part of Sodom. We do not know to what degree in regards to the immorality that Lot himself had become involved with it. But he's definitely attached to it, isn't he? He's definitely become comfortable with it, right? And isn't that kind of the challenge we have in our nation today, that we don't become comfortable with all the things that are going on around us? With the things that we see on TV, the commercials that we see on TV, and some of the shows that we have, that we don't become comfortable with immorality, that we don't become comfortable with the things that are around us, that we become like Lot. That we're living in this terrible city, and yet we just seem to be oblivious to it all. That we have, as the prophets would say, lost the ability to blush, right? At what we see around us. Well, he had become a part of Sodom to the degree, he'd become attached to it, that literally when we see the situation arise that they need to leave the city, I mean, God has obviously got a time set for judgment on these cities, right? It's coming. And these angels, they know the time. And at a particular point, they literally have to drag Lot and his two daughters and his wife out of the city. They literally just have to take hold of him and drag him out. They can't just get him to come on with the fact that the city's about to be destroyed. Let me tell you what, folks. You tell me my house is about to get hit by a meteorite, I'm getting out of there. I'll even leave my Mac. And y'all know what that means. That means I want to live. I don't think I'd leave my iPad, but definitely my Mac. But here he is. He doesn't want to leave. It's not just, you know, we talk about Lot's wife, and she was still connected. Let me tell you, he was connected to the city too. He was attached to it. Daryl's weighing it out over there. He was attached to the city. We look back and we see Lot's wife looking back. She's turned into a pillar of salt. We say, see, what a terrible woman she was. Let me tell you what, she wasn't any worse than her husband. He just didn't look back. But he was just, they had to drag him out of the city. And so, after they had left the city, we know the story. The cities are destroyed. It's like a furnace. The valley is laid waste to. The city of Zoar is only saved because of Lot's dealings with the angels, that he couldn't make it all the way to the mountains. And so, can I just make it to there? And so that probably saved that city. But he goes on. And you know, there is a point where the sins that we commit and the sins that we have in our lives or that we allow to be around us begin to affect the people around us, right? Because Lot then goes to a cave. Now we know the wife turning into salt and Sodom, but sometimes we don't go into this story, do we? This is kind of the dark side of the Lot story. Lot goes into a cave. It's kind of unclear exactly why he's there. Some think that, you know, from the way the scriptures describe it, that him and his daughters think there's no one left. I mean, you know, there was this great furnace, this great smoke going up. It looks like everything's just been laid waste to, that they might be the only ones left. But it certainly appears that, you know, Lot did not want to stay in the city of Zoar, so he went out to a cave, maybe scared to live in any city now, that God might just bring that same destruction down on whatever city he's in, so it's just best to stay out. But he's hiding in a cave. He's come a long way, hasn't he, from that rich man? Now he has nothing but the clothes on his back, and he's living in a cave. That's what sin can do, right? So he's living there in a cave, and you think, well, he's hit bottom. No, he hasn't. His two daughters that are there with him, of course his wife is not there, his two daughters that are there with him say, you know, there's either no men or our father's never going to go back to civilization, basically, to where there will be men. We'll never have a husband. We'll never have children. So they plot in their own mind to, each one on a different night, will get their father drunk, have sexual relations with him, and by their father have children. I think about that. I ask you the question, where do you think they got that kind of ideas? Where do you think those kind of ideas come into your mind? When you're living in a city like Sodom? Sure. I don't think you get those ideas when you're living in better places than Sodom and Gomorrah. To do something so heinous as that. But they do. They do that and they become pregnant with their father's children. And they have those children. One is Moab, one is Ammon. One is the father of the Moabites, and one is the father of the Ammonites, peoples that will be at war with Abraham's descendants many years later. You know, I think there's just a couple of three lessons that we can draw from Lot tonight, and then the lesson's yours. And one is, good mingled with bad is not good. You know, you might say, well, it's 60% good and 40% bad, right? You know, you're looking at the land of Jordan and, hey, that's really good land. And that's the best part of it, and that's probably about 60%, but there's these cities over there. That's about 40%. Good mingled with bad is not good. We need to stay away from bad, not try to mix it in with our lives. We can't serve two masters. We can't have both in our lives. We either seek righteousness or we don't. His choice of the valley was a choice of what appeared to be good mingled with bad, but the bad got the best of him, didn't it? And all the great grazing land in the world wasn't going to return everything that he lost because he gave in to the sin that was surrounding him. And second, we see that surrounding ourselves with evil will adversely affect our lives. There's a reason why we're not to be unequally yoked with immorality. There is a reason why we are to flee it. There is a reason why when the children of Israel entered into the land of Canaan, God said, I will drive out the Canaanite peoples, right? I will drive them before you. And I want you to destroy them all because I don't want any of them around, because if they stay around, you will be surrounded by paganism and evil. And we look at the Scriptures and we look at the book of Judges at the beginning of it and we see God condemn them because they did not drive the people out, right? And then God says, I'm not going to drive them out. I'm going to let you see the consequences of your decision to allow evil to remain all around you. And they're going to be a thorn to you. They're going to be a hornet. It's going to make your lives miserable. And it did. Read the book of Judges. If you don't believe that they knew some misery as a result of the paganism that they allowed to influence their lives. Folks, we need friends that are going to bring us closer to God. We do not need friends that are going to be pulling us away constantly day in and day out. And I know the arguments, well, I'm trying to convert them. Yeah, but you better make sure that you're strong enough to be converting them and them not converting you, because I've seen that happen far too many times. And if they have enough pull on your life to drag you away from Christ, you need to get away from them. You need to pluck that eyeball out, cut that right hand off, don't you? Because it's better to go to heaven than to keep a friend that's going to take you to hell. And then last of all, we see that sin will take us to places we don't want to go. You know, at the beginning of every baseball season, every team thinks they're going to the World Series, don't they? Even my Cardinals, but obviously not. Every team thinks that Dallas fans think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But only two teams get there. You know, so many times sin promises so many things, doesn't it? But sin comes from the father of lies, as Jesus said in John chapter 8. It comes from His temptations. And because of that, it's never going to give you what it promises. It's going to give you things you don't see on the wrapper, that they don't describe in the description of the product, right, or whatever it is. Sin will always bring more to your life than you realize. It'll never bring good. You know, it may bring temporary pleasure, it may bring temporary happiness, but it brings nothing lasting except hurt and eternal separation from God. Lot failed to see that. He failed to understand that. And while he had the opportunity to be around one of the great men of the Bible, he chose instead to be with ravenous, immoral men of Sodom, a city that now carries a name that is still heinous and destructive to this very day. This evening, if you have allowed your life to be surrounded by sin, and as a result of that being surrounded, you have allowed yourself to be carried away with it. If you have bought the lie that Satan told you, now have realized, like the prodigal son did, that it's not so great, is it? You can come home. You don't have to go all the way to the pig pen, do you? You can come home right now, knowing that that's where it's going. And it'll always go there. That's the road of sin. It's to the pig pen. But you have an opportunity tonight to come home to the Master. Come home to the house of the Father, to the celebration of the return of a son or a daughter that was lost. We can assist you with that in any way this evening. We want to do that. If it is to come to the Father for the very first time in obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we want to do that. We want to help you with that as well. And He stands with His arms open, waiting for you to come. Tonight, if you come forward, you do not come to Nathan. You're not coming. You're not responding to me. You are responding to the Heavenly Father. Do so and you will be blessed. Abraham was blessed because he looked to God. Lot was not, because he looked to sin. May you not make the same mistake. We can assist you in any way tonight. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing.